And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they were moving it to Rosario. Yeah.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affle drives forward. Affle scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it is the Massive Report podcast brought to you by our good friends at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. I also learned last Friday they've got classic console games, including the original Halo. I got my butt kicked at that for about an hour, and it was enjoyable nonetheless. You can head to oldnortharcade.com if you want to learn more about location, some of their beer menus, all that good stuff. Hit them up. It is Bart with you. We got lots of other friends that we're going to be talking crew about with, including Patrick Murphy. Smurf, how you doing, sir?
I'm good, and I can verify that Bart got his butt kicked in Halo, as I witnessed it.
But
did not partake.
That was the smarter decision. You were smarter than I on that one. Also with us, Ralph Schudel. Ralph, how are you doing, sir?
Where was my invite?
It ended up pretty impromptu, but
it's in the mail.
And yeah, exactly. I was going to say, otherwise, Patrick Murphy just said, I swear to God, if you invite Ralph, we'll just know. Then we've also got Alex Stanek, who we also decided not to invite. Alex, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good.
Good.
He's drinking his mint tea. He's enjoying life over there.
Oh, that's he's got.
Yeah, Halo's dumb.
It is. I agree with that. I never really.
Are you a Fortnite kid, Alex? Are you a Fortnite guy, or is it PUBG now, or
I play a little Fortnite, a little bit. I've been doing Sea of Thieves, though, but no one cares about this at all, so let's just go to soccer. Let's just talk soccer, Ralph. Doing this podcast for 2 minutes, and you're already off the rails. Come on.
Hey, we got crew esports we could talk about.
Please, no. I'd rather talk about Fortnite.
Speaking of things that people don't want to talk about but are going to talk about anyway, we've got to recap last Saturday's loss to the Vancouver Whitecaps, so we'll be leading the show off with that. Look at some of the individual performances from that game, a lackluster game that was probably the exact opposite of that Montreal game a couple weeks ago, and that the crew completely failed to close a team out in the second half. We'll look at some of the issues away from the field. Attendance, one of the big storylines through three home games in March, and we will talk about that and kind of see if we can peel a little bit beneath the numbers to get to the issue at the core of that. Also look at some other progress from crew players who've yet to make their debut for the season, but are getting closer. And Mike Grella and Gaston Sarr, they're back training with the team, and we'll get an update on their status. And we'll also get an update on the status from the great men and women that are working to save the crew. We'll get an update on a handful of their developments over the last weeks, and then get some of your questions from the masses via Twitter and Facebook. Again, if you're listening now, you're too late, but you can always hit us up on Twitter with the hashtag MRPod for questions throughout the week, as well as on Facebook at The Massive Report. And then we will do our first Bridge View preview. But first, let's head back to Mapfre Stadium Saturday. And Pat Murphy, why don't you kick us off with the recap?
Oh, that was an interesting game. And I say that not necessarily just because the team lost, but first loss of the season, but just the way it happened. And I think, you know, if you look back at you know, even the game in Toronto, but specifically the Montreal game, we've seen a few times now that this team comes out and can put together a good first 45 minutes or so, and then for whatever reason seems to let a team back in it in the second half. You know, in Toronto, obviously, they didn't get punished. They won 2-0, but they did let Toronto start to control things. Obviously, TFC hit the post twice, so that game could have turned out differently. Obviously, the Montreal game, they do let Montreal back in it, end up getting the late penalty kick, so everything turns out to be okay. And then they go to Philly and kind of put a snoozer, and then they dominate a DC team. So, but this week, you know, getting the goal early, I think it was the 29th minute from Giassi, you know, his fourth goal, as our Guillermo Torres pointed out to me, that he's only scored against Canadian teams so far this year, which is interesting. Hopefully
still
that doesn't
twice
continue.
As many as he scored last year, though.
Yes. Also, his fourth goal, which he now has four, I guess didn't come until the July in the year that he scored 16 for the Galaxy back in 2014. So off to a good start for him, but hopefully it won't only be against Canadian teams for the Crew's sake. But yeah, a pretty good first half, I thought. You know, Vancouver had some chances, but we knew they would. The second half, though, you know, the guys come out of the locker room, and you know, I don't know if it was that they were overconfident, that they thought they, you know, already had the game in the bag, but you know, it was a very different team in the second half. They very much let Vancouver back into the game, give up a goal to tie it up. A header from Hector Jimenez goes right to Kai. Kai plays it out wide. A ball crossed in. Zach comes diving out for it, redirects it right into the path of Breck Shea. And, you know, there's a lot of things we can break down about what went wrong on that goal, but Breck Shea finishes. But then the response from the Crew, you know, not to go after and try and get a winner after giving up the equalizer. And then, you know, they give up that second goal, and it's another goal filled with mistakes. You know, Kai ends up heading it home, but too much time on the ball from the cross out wide. Kai ends up matched up with Will Trapp, which is not a matchup that I think the crew want. And, you know, they can't find an equalizer, though I think Artur, it was, hit the crossbar late. You know, just I think a disappointing second half for the team. And, you know, I'm beginning to wonder if this team, you know, maybe needs to figure out how to put together a full 90 minutes, because other than the DC game, I'm not sure that they have yet this year.
It definitely did seem the case there. Of course, we'd be remiss. This game also, frankly, you know, could have been worse were it not for VAR and disallowing that goal. But you can also look at it the other way. And I thought it was pretty questionable with the lead up to that goal that was disallowed. It looked like there was a chance for a penalty call. I think it was either Federico Higuain or Pedro Santos who went down in the box against Vancouver. No call. Vancouver quick to come up the other direction and puts one in, but that goal later disallowed. But I think it kind of, that sort of encapsulated that half for me. Just watching, again, his Crew kind of disappointed with no call in the box. And then as Vancouver comes and takes the ball down the other half and puts it in. Again, disallowed, so maybe a bit of a moot point, but certainly not an encouraging second half performance.
Yeah, and I was privileged enough to be on the side. I was standing actually right by the Vancouver bench when that call, that questionable call came up, and to me, not, you know, trying to play favorites necessarily, he looked every bit fouled. I was expecting the referee to point to the spot, but that officiating altogether too at times I think was very interesting. There were very interesting decisions being made throughout that. I'm not trying to throw the tinfoil hat on at all or anything like that. I just would like to know what the referee saw in certain key moments of that game. But I'm really glad VAR came up. I saw Davies kind of chested down, but his back was turned to me, so I wasn't sure necessarily how he got a hand on it. But yeah, it was frustrating. And you know, you can't let the referee dictate the game like that, unfortunately. I mean, I know we see it in leagues abroad too, but some officials, it just, I don't know, it was interesting. And you've got – it's frustrating, especially from a Columbus Crew SC standpoint, that you have to dance around the officials and have to play against the defense too, because it's just not a win-win situation either way.
I just thought it was a poor performance in general. I thought – and maybe this is a little harsh, but I thought Zach Steffen could have done better on the Vancouver goals. I thought he maybe looked a little off that game. Throughout the whole game, I just thought he looked a little slow, maybe in reaction, and even kind of redirecting that ball back out. I thought maybe he could have held on to it, but I don't know. Just a kind of one of those weird performances that we see sometimes, especially early on in a season. So I don't know. I'm not reading too much into it. I didn't read too much into the wins that we had. And I haven't really seen any reason why we should read into the loss either. This is just kind of early MLS season shenanigans as far as I'm concerned. And we'll see how things develop. But not our best performance. Defensively, I thought we were a little bit more shaky than we've appeared in recent weeks. I thought the midfield positioning could have been better. Steffen, I don't know, still some question marks from me for that game. But I think we'll bounce back. I don't think it'll be a big problem, but this is MLS. You win some, you lose some. So moving on.
You mentioned Steffen and his performance, and did any of you guys attribute any of that to the U.S. men's national team game? You know, all the games that he had that last week, he played all 90 minutes in that win against Paraguay.
One of the things that I think, you know, if anything from the national team, maybe – you know, that he was dealing with a little bit of a foot injury. You know, he said that he got stepped on and that, you know, things were fine and whatnot. But I agree with Alex. I didn't think he was at his best. I don't know if the foot necessarily impacts, you know, not catching that ball. But, you know, if you don't jump the way you're normally used to or something, you know, maybe. And he even said after the game when we were talking to him that, you know, maybe he could have held on to that cross there instead of punching it. You know, but I think you can point to a lot of things. I mean, you know, if Harrison Offal's positioned a little bit better, you know, he had no idea where Breck Shea was on that goal, you know, kind of steps in towards Zach and then turns around and sees, you know, Breck right there. You know, if he's positioned a little bit better, if, you know, they don't give the ball away, again, on another weird header from Hector, kind of like what we saw from Lawless last week, you know, and that just kind of puts people in bad spots. You know, I thought both goals, and both goals came from giveaways. You know, Artur gave the ball away for the second goal. And, you know, then Milton's pulled out of position. You know, Lawless has to come out to the winger out there. And that kind of forces Will to push in more into the middle than he probably would have liked. And, you know, he ends up matched up with Kai instead of Jonathan, which is obviously a problem. You know, I think those goals, you know, Kai obviously a good finish. Both of them were good finishes. But, you know, I think those goals are little things. I think the bigger issue is just that, you know, they just didn't look into it as much in the second half. You know, you look at the first half, I think they had 60-some percent of the possession. We're really playing some quick soccer. And that just didn't happen in the second half. And, you know, you think you give up a goal and you're at home and you want to respond. And, you know, the energy should ramp up, especially after you give up a second, you know, push for an equalizer there so you're not losing at home. And I just didn't see that from the guys. And, you know, it's interesting, but I don't know if it's necessarily alarming. I didn't ever expect this team to go undefeated. But, you know, it was, I think, a disheartening performance after you start the season 3-0-1.
For the record, I did expect the Crew were going to go undefeated.
So did Giassi Zardes. He actually told me that.
You mentioned the response or maybe lack thereof, and you look at, first of all, the lineup that Greg Berhalter trotted out, notably Milton Valenzuela, omitted from the starting 11. He was the first substitute brought on right ahead of that goal that eventually, you know, went on to be the game winner. Right before the goal that was disallowed. And then Kai Kamara scores at the 78th minute. And then you get a reaction and Adam Jean comes in there for Jonathan. a little bit of it, you know, maybe interesting, but I would almost like to see, even though it was pretty shortly after the Kamara goal, I almost would have liked to see that offensive substitution earlier in the game because the run of play had been going, even though possession was Vancouver's or in Columbus's favor, the run of play, it seemed to be like it was being dictated by Vancouver. You just, you know, concede that goal disallowed. So what do we think about Greg Berhalter's decision-making with the lineup?
I thought it was intriguing. One of the big things that I noticed at the start of the game was, you know, hey, holy crap, where's Milton? But, you know, I still trust Greg very adamantly. I'd definitely get excited to kind of have him lead us in the battle and get the team ready for the day, you know, the game on a weekly basis. Are some of his substitutions kind of weird and a little uncharacteristic? Absolutely. I mean, that's been his MO the entire time that he's been in Columbus. But I wonder, you know, if it's, you know, Argudo had a good opportunity. I've seen a couple isolation shots where he was wide open towards the end of the game. I just am still not sold on Adam John as a second striker. He did get very close to putting his head on the ball with a late cross to try to get the equalizer. But, I mean, I still trust him. It's, you know, there's a reason that he's in that position, and I'm sitting here criticizing him for his job. But, you know, it's, you know, I think he's still got a pretty good feel for the game. It's just, you know, historically, if you look at it, Vancouver's always had Columbus's number, at least since 2011.
I was very confused by the starting of Hector, and you know, this isn't anything against Hector. Obviously he played really well. He's played really well pretty much anytime he plays, gives a solid performance, but you know, and especially in the end of last season, and you know, is he into the playoffs playing at left back over Yuka and Wayland? But you know, I've thought Milton's been really good. He came off that DC game where, you know, scores his first goal, but also just plays a pretty solid game. And you know, it confused me taking him off, and I just posted a story about Greg's kind of answers to why, and they just wanted to get Hector some minutes, wanted to get Milton a little bit of rest. He is a kid at 19 who isn't necessarily used to the physical demands of the professional game, only played, I think, 13 games for Newell's Old Boys before he came over here. So I do get some of that a little bit, but I think the fact that you haven't played you know, a midweek game yet, you know, you're just playing once a week, it seems to me that at this point in the season, you don't need to be tinkering too much. I get the fact that you want to get Hector minutes, but, you know, I don't know if it necessarily cost them. I thought Hector was fine other than the header on the goal and whatnot, but, yeah, it was surprising to me. He's played well. I thought in playing well, you keep him on the field, but you know, they made the change. I don't think that was the reason for the loss, so ultimately I'm not sure if it makes a big difference.
I just think Greg Berhalter wants the U.S. national team job, and he saw how much they liked Jürgen Klinsmann and his random left back changes, so I think that's
what that was.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Playing non-left backs at left backs.
I mean, Hector's kind of a left back. He's a left back, but just let me have my joke.
No, he did. I mean, Pedro Sanch last year in the playoffs in that game against Toronto. He was playing at the, albeit, you know, with the five in the back that you have him there. And then we know if we ever get another, if the Crew ever get another striker, you can just slot Giassi Zardes back there.
Right. At least it's not like Robert Varzija when he tried to make Ethan Finley an outside back.
Hey. Days. Hey, we respect Robert Varzija in this house, okay?
Whose house?
This house, this podcast.
I
want to just, since we're on the topic of Bobby and we're talking about random stuff.
Here we go.
I really miss Marosevic, and Patrick Goldan is not here to cry about this with me, but I would have loved to see Marosevic with a Berhalter.
What about Sebastian Miranda too? While we're on off topic, then too.
Are you gonna? Whenever we mention Sebastian Miranda, you know, we have to mention that header. So, go Google Miranda's 20-yard header against
goal.
Was that against the Dynamo? I can't remember who that was against.
I was thinking Dallas, but yeah, I could
Houston
be wrong.
Or Dallas.
That's maybe my favorite crew goal of all time. So, yes, bring back Miranda, too. He's probably 40 years old now. Who cares?
Sign other him players up. Other players who would have been good in Greg's system, Guillerme.
And Glauber.
Glauber.
Matias Sanchez.
I still follow Glauber on Instagram, and he's still a good follow. So
Eric Vasquez.
There's a shout-out.
One rocket goal. Everyone loved him. Jason
how
Gary.
How would Danny O'Rourke do in a Greg Berhalter system? Just
terrible.
Out of
he would be so bad. It's not even funny.
He would get more cards and give away the ball.
Because our defensive midfielders are in Greg's system. It's you make one mistake and the whole team is screwed. Danny O'Rourke lived for mistakes. I mean, he was a walking mistake. And I love
that's
Danny.
MLS Cup champion Danny O'Rourke.
Yeah. I know, but he was all effort and very little skill. But
it's funny though, love him coming out of Indiana, he was like, I mean, he was certainly more of a like disruptor than he was a skill guy, but like at least at the college level, he could play a dangerous ball, like that corner pass, long ball over the top that Will likes to do. Like that was Danny's thing at Indiana. I don't know what happened at Danny.
Real quick, what's the most irrelevant crew player that you can think of right now? Because I'm hanging out with Chris. I'm thinking Chris Birchall right now.
I also follow him on Instagram, and he's a decent follow. But Glauber Verti will bounce between trying to sell air fryers and taking pictures shirtless with beers in the pool in his mansion house and just like all around partying. So, and I think he's got some sort of like Brazil coaching license now. So
nice.
Glauber_Berti, Berti. Give him a follow.
Since we mentioned him last week, and we can just keep this up, to answer your question, Ralph, Jed Zehner.
Yeah. I think we have to pay royalties every time we mention that name now. Off you go, Bart. Sorry.
For what it's good, I'll go with John Bush.
That's a good one. Irrelevant? He's not irrelevant.
He's not relevant anymore.
What is he relevant to?
He's got High Performance Goalkeeping Academy, makers of high performance goalkeeping gloves, my friend.
That doesn't have anything to do with the crew.
That's not relevant to the crew.
MLS champion John Bush. Maybe. Nope. I don't know. No? He wasn't on the No, he wasn't. Never mind.
Nope. No. Hesmer, Grunebaum.
Anyway, back on topic, and of course, one of the topics that has been, can't avoid through this month of March so far has been attendance. Again, announced attendance for this past weekend's game below 10,000, I believe the lowest announced in MLS. That being said, certainly... when you see these pictures of other games that have been played throughout, basically anything with the exception of the El Tráfico last week.
What a name, by the way. I hate that name.
It's wonderful. What are you talking about?
It's so artificially constructed by Major League Soccer that it's
Let's not go down this road.
It's cringy.
I
don't want to get us on another 30-minute tangent. We're on the strict time schedule tonight.
The artificially created one is the Battle for Los Angeles, which is like, take the Rage Against the Machine album, that kind of stuff. That's the artificial MLS one.
I'm just glad they didn't go with the 405 or the what's the big – I can't think of the name of the big
Route 66.
No, is it the 405? Is it the 405? Whatever. Yeah, attendance. I'm sorry. I'm going to shut up now.
Yeah,
goodbye.
Yeah. Well, the only numbers we need to be talking about are the numbers of butts in seats or standing up around seats in Columbus and throughout MLS this season. So I was kind of saying, it hasn't looked like, despite what the numbers are showing, when you take the eye test and you see these other games, it hasn't looked like the crew are trailing as far behind as the league would lead us to believe through a month in the season.
So there were other teams that I'm convinced had fewer people in the seats. You can kind of go on Twitter and look for these things if you want. There's an empty seats Twitter account that's got a lot of photos. Colorado versus Philadelphia, they announced 10,790. there looked like there were maybe 6,000 people in that stadium. You look at Houston, they announced 17,000. There was maybe 10. You look at Minnesota, they announced 18,000. Again, maybe 10, maybe. 13,000 announced in Chicago, maybe 7 or 8,000. And then in Columbus, I'm sure they announced the actual attendance there. So we probably had 8,992. I don't think
it was 8,700 something.
Okay, whatever it was, yeah. It's, you know, it's in the 8,000s. I'm sure they're announcing the gate, and I don't think they're lying on those numbers, but they're not announcing the amount of tickets sold. They're not talking about the season tickets sold that are not able to make the game. They're not talking about the people who buy tickets and are just, for whatever reason, not able to make the game. And we've had some weird kickoff times, guys. These are not, you know, the most convenient times in the season. These kind of early season games are a little weird sometimes. And so, you know, I'm not reading too much into it. And like we talked about last week, there are a lot of people who simply will not give pre-court money. I disagreed with it last week. I'll disagree with it again this week. Come out, support your team. Don't steal memories from yourself because you want to, you know, stick it to pre-court with your $20 that he's not going to notice one way or the other. That's going to be split 50 different ways because of the way MLS is structured. You know, come out and enjoy yourselves and try to, you know, for 90 minutes, forget all the crazy crap that's going on with our team. But there are a lot of people who won't take that advice and will stay home and will kind of cut off their nose to spite their face a little bit and just say, you know, I'm not going to go to games this year. If we get new ownership, those people will be back and they'll bring their friends and they'll be as enthusiastic as always. A lot of those people are, you know, diehard fans. So I'm not worried about it. I don't think it speaks to the level of support in Columbus. I think that's something that's really important. I think a lot of times people associate attendance numbers with community support, and Columbus is a very unique situation this year where those two things are not linked. There are a lot of people who are essentially boycotting the club who care deeply about it. So I'm not reading into it, but honestly, I don't think we're the worst in the league, and I think that the league probably has the internal numbers of how many tickets are actually being sold in Columbus and how many tickets are actually being sold in these other communities. And I think they'll take that into consideration when finding a way forward with all this.
I just want to get, you know, kind of your thoughts, a couple of points that I saw on first, just an observation from the stadium, and that, you know, obviously one of the things, Nordec was sold out. But if you were there and you kind of attended in Nordec, it didn't quite, I've seen when that place is sold out, and granted you've got, it's GA, so there are X amount of tickets, but people can all kind of, conglomerate down near the sidelines. But do you think, one, Anthony Precourt is buying a bunch of the tickets in Nordec so that people can't buy tickets in there and just to make it look bad?
Bart, no. It's, come on.
The other less likely is looking at, I'm not sure who brought it up, but of somebody on the Twitters brought up Chivas USA as an example in terms of the way the MLS has gone about attendance and the sort of artificially inflated attendance numbers that you see for all MLS teams, but then just basically resolving to no longer inflate those once they've kind of decided that they were going to contract Chivas and that it wasn't going to work. And so it makes the drop in attendance look much more precipitous than it actually was in those last couple of seasons, because they had them going from averaging, you know, in the 15, 13,000s to suddenly averaging 8,000.
Oh, yeah, they didn't average 8,000. They averaged 3,000.
Yeah.
You can go ahead, Patrick, but yeah.
I think there's a lot of reasons for the numbers, and you've touched on some of them, both Bart and Alex. I think one thing, too, that we should mention is, on top of people deciding not to boycott the team, that's decreased the season ticket numbers. So, you know, even in a place, you know, in a place where they are announcing those tickets as, you know, tickets sold instead of people at the game. You know, if Columbus had those season ticket holders still, you know, buying season tickets, because there's plenty of people who decided not to do that this year, you know, it's played a part. I think that if you look at other sports when teams have gone through something similar, now obviously this is a pretty unique case given, you know, how the kind of up in the air nature of things, but teams that are in relocation seasons potentially, you know, it's usually resulted in very bad attendance. I mean, you look at the Rams when they moved from St. Louis to LA. You know, I think the Chargers, the NFL, there's plenty of examples that I saw somewhere. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to, you know, get people out to your games when there's at least, you know, in this case, a portion of the franchise that wants the team to be elsewhere. You know, it's just not a priority anymore if your attention is focused elsewhere. In a lot of other cases, they've already announced the move, so they're you know, making that happen. Here, they obviously have not announced anything, but they're clearly trying to make it happen. So, you know, it's going to be unfortunate for a while, I think. You know, the weather hasn't helped. The fact that DC has these so many road games is making it tough on everybody in the Eastern Conference, I think, except for, you know, Atlanta. Even, you know, I was watching Toronto's game on Friday night, and I don't know what they announced attendance was there, but, you know, I watched up until halftime, and, you know, it wasn't sold out. I mean, it was a good crowd, but for that place that normally is jam-packed, they weren't sold out. And, you know, I imagine having these early home games, and especially having these Champions League games, I don't know what they're charging for those tickets. I imagine this has all played a part. And so it's unfortunate that it's all come together at the same time like this. And, you know, as I said last week, I'll be interested to see once the weather gets better, if the team's still doing well, if more people start to come out. But, you know, unless it's announced that the team's remaining in Columbus, I don't know how they get above an announced crowd of 15,000-16,000 this year.
So apparently, I'm looking at an ESPN article. Apparently, the average attendance for Chivas throughout the whole season was 7,000. So maybe it's a little bit higher than what I was saying. That was the Wikipedia page number was 3,000 and change. But regardless, either way, I mean, that was a team that had historically had much worse attendance problems than we are having now in Columbus. And when they decided to fold Chivas, they also announced, hey, well, we're going to put another team here, FYI. Like, you're not going to be without a franchise. So if they think that the Chivas crowd is, you know, able to sustain a second team, and I think that they were and are, I think that they also have to be looking at Columbus saying, you know, is this something that can be turned around? I mean, is this something that there's still a future here? I think that that is what they're thinking. I think that when you look at the comments from people around the league, and maybe we're getting into a totally different subject now. I know we are going to talk about Save the Crew later, but I think when you look at comments from Major League Soccer folks, or even from kind of talking heads in Major League Soccer circles, you know, your Jason Davises, your Alexi Lalases, guys like that, I think there's a lot of interest in keeping the team here. So we'll see how things go, but I would not panic about these attendance numbers. By all means, come out to games. Show the world that you know, are a soccer fan here in Columbus, and that, you know, you're invested in this, even if pre-court is kind of yanking everybody around a little bit. But yeah, I don't think this is going to make or break us. I think all of the decisions being made are being made in boardrooms and, you know, business offices on the top floors of buildings here in Columbus. I think this is going to be all right.
I think one thing that I've noticed, and that's come from, you know, when each week when they announce the attendance, we tweet it out from the Mass Report account. We get a lot of responses from, you know, other fan bases. There's been a lot of Orlando fans that have tweeted about it. And, you know, the response from a lot of people has been, oh, you know, you want to save this team, but, you know, this is the attendance you're getting and things like that. And I do think it's unfortunate if that's spreading around fan bases because, as we talked about, there are so many different things that have gone into this. You know, I mean, let's be honest here. It's not like this team has been, you know, killing it attendance wise. It's been doing better before this year, but, you know, so you didn't start with a sold out crowd and then are pulling away from that. So, you know, I hope that around the league and whatnot, within fan bases, that is not the perception, because I do think that, you know, if the situation's different, if there, you know, was more hope from the casual fan, you know, if there was more marketing, things like that being done, that this would be a team, you know, especially given the playoff run last year, that's averaging, you know, 16, 17, maybe even higher than that once we get to the middle of the season, you know, 1,000 fans. So, you know, it's I just hope that, that perception that, you know, oh, well, this is the reason they're moving the team isn't the case. It's more that the attendance is being affected because of that.
Well, and I also think that when you see a lot of fans from newer teams like Orlando, like Atlanta, kind of making that argument, I think it makes sense when you think about the kind of marketing that they've been sold the last few years. When Orlando were founded, you know, their first game was that, you know, fill the bowl thing, and they hyped up their attendance, and that was the main thing that they were pushing, was look at all these people who are coming out to our games. You should come out too. You don't want to miss out on this, you know, brand new thing. Look at how exciting this is, and all these people are here. Atlanta, very similar thing. You know, the marketing department in Atlanta has decided that that's one of the angles that they're really going to push. And so these fans, yeah, it really is. I mean, you're selling this experience more than even the sporting event. And it, yeah. If you have that in your city, it's a really, you know, great option. And FC Cincinnati has done this as well. But when
it's the thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. And when your fans are kind of in that mindset of, we are successful because of all of the people who are here. We are successful because of our crowd. We are successful because of our crowd. Seattle was like this for a while as well. They were kind of the first team that really kind of tried to market that. Like, look at us selling out this big football stadium. Look at how popular we are. Well, their crowds have, you know, fallen off a little bit. And their attendance and their attention has fallen off a little bit. They're no longer kind of the bright, shiny object of Major League Soccer. Now Major League Soccer has moved on to, you know, newer and shinier things. And I think the fans in Seattle are on board with us now. And I wonder if that's part of the reason why, is they've kind of been through the process of the league now. So I don't blame Orlando fans or Atlanta fans for doubting us or saying, look at, you know, how are you not able to get 70,000 people when we can put 70,000 in Atlanta? You know, why can't you get 35,000, 40,000 in Orlando? We get 40,000 down here. Why can't you do that? You must not care about your team. Well, you haven't been through what we've been through. You haven't kind of aged in this league the way that we have, the way that all the original 96 teams have. You look at Chicago, which is not even an original team. You know, they are having a lot of struggles despite being in a large market area. You look at cities like Colorado, cities like even Vancouver, you know, not a fairly new team having some struggles with attendance. Certainly Philadelphia having a lot of problems. And then all of your kind of run-of-the-mill New York team, or, you know, New York Red Bulls, DC United, teams like that. So I don't blame them because they haven't experienced that yet, but I think all of the other fans who have been around longer, they know this game. They know what's going on. They're not going to, you know, fall into the narrative of, oh, Crew fans don't care. Look at all these people who are not attending games. No, they get it. They get it, and they're on board with us. And if the new kids on the block aren't necessarily on board, their owners seem to be. Look up Arthur Blank's comments about Major League Soccer owners from about a month ago. Very, very interesting. And I know I mentioned that a while back, where he talked about owners who are not investing the time necessary to make their team succeed. That could be certainly interpreted as pertaining to Anthony Precourt. So I think that the owners of these really successful teams want other teams to be successful. And hopefully they see a future here for us in Columbus. I know I certainly do.
And circling back, you've made a lot of really good points there, Alex. And the one thing that I get really agitated about, I was having a discussion with another editor for another publication earlier today, is the marketing aspect of this team. And that, I guess if you'd want to, goes back to PSV to figure out how to property market this team. But the one thing that I've noticed that really agitates me is the lack of emphasis on the certain ethnic groups that this game attracts. And, you know, guys, we've been around this game so long that we see the power that it has to bring certain people together. You know, you look at GCG Bag with the Chris Initiative that's trying to get, you know, refugees into Moffray Stadium to kind of help them assimilate to culture, you know, and even the Hispanic outreach that the club did several years ago. And one of the big things I remember for one of my first games that I attended was the fact that, you know, they would do disciplinary announcements or goal announcements in English first and then follow it up with, you know, a Spanish announcer. And I thought that was so cool because that's just a way to make sure that everybody's really connected into the game and everything like that. And the thing is that you want to make sure that you get people into the stadium. You want to make sure that you create a community. And, you know, the neat thing about this game is, yes, there are people that you may not set, you know, socialize with outside of the stadium or outside of this game, but you guys have that connection. People have that connection towards this game. It's a great icebreaker, and it's just a beautiful thing. But this team historically has not marketed it itself well. And I said this to 10TV reporter Dom DeBerry on Tuesday night. I said, you look at Ohio State. Ohio State sells itself. The Blue Jackets, they have the backing of Nationwide. And, you know, you look, I just saw probably 3 playoff commercials before we tuned in to start recording the podcast tonight.
They're on Fox Sports Ohio, too. Easy to watch the games. You know where it's going to be.
You have that. You have a great radio deal. You look at Columbus Crew SC. Okay, big whoop. You have an exclusive contract with Spectrum Sports. Okay, so you started alienating a lot of the prospective people that would have watched your product. Great. Then you make the argument for the over-the-air broadcast with Sinclair, with CW, ABC6, and then I think MyTV is the other random one. I mean, there are people that live, you know, I don't want to say the magic 75-mile number outside of Columbus, but there are people that live in pretty far reaches. You know, if you look at London, you look at Newark, if you go north or south, that may not get the strongest signal. So where's the enticement to watch the game? You know, if you go back to a Fox Sports TV deal and, you know, you put your ego aside for a second and realize, okay, we may not have that Crew television magazine show that we wanted, but hey, at least we're going to have a further reach in the state of Ohio, then that's going to help grow your fan base. But what you need to do is you need to market. People want to feel included in certain projects. And the fact that you stop marketing to certain ethnic groups and certain people, it's just, it's not a good recipe. I mean, if you guys want to go back to FC Cincinnati, the big thing that they embrace is the German heritage down there with, I believe, their supporter groups, Die Einsteit, that I think is in the Bailey. It's one of them, at least. But, you know, they have the checkered flags in there for the German heritage down in the city. And, you know, the club really, really embraces what they're about. And you look at Crew SC and people, you know, for me, at least, if I'm walking around with a T-shirt or a jacket or a jersey on, you know, they go, oh, that's cool. Haven't they moved yet? And it's just, it's a really awkward conversation because you need to, you know, I guess anytime you have a chance, guys, is I would say as fans, try to educate people about what's really going on and try to keep it as objective as humanly possible without any type of bias. But you need to tell them, hey, guys, the team's still here. The team's for, you know, at least for what we know is planning on playing in 2019. Hopefully, you know, what location that is to be determined. But, you know, it's something that, you know, you've got to invite people out there, and that's where you get into these great initiatives like what GCG Bag's doing with the Chris Initiative or what Save the Crew's doing with Phil DeFray.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been, I mean, you mentioned it, Ralph and Alex, Patrick, but both of you kind of echoed it, that idea that to create that push to encourage people to make, you know, filling the stadium a thing. And because Crew marketing clearly isn't doing that, the Save the Crew movement has picked that up. And, you know, I think right now the attendance numbers through the first 3 games, they speak for themselves. But I also think that you'd look at what it would be if it weren't for all these volunteer fans that are taking their time to do the work that, you know, Crew ostensibly pays people, a sales department to do, to try to encourage people to buy tickets. And they've created that their own kind of different names for the different sections of the stadium. So it's not just like Nordeca, to try to build that idea of community as well. And I think as we're getting, as we get through the first 2 months and the first, you know, basically third of the home games or whatever, within the first, you know, 7-8 weeks of the season, and suddenly there's a bit more time between home games, that the folks there at Phil DeFray might be able to have a little bit more success in building some and grabbing, helping to build attendance for some of those subsequent games as we get into May and June.
Well, and I also think, you know, we talk a lot about how the front office has not necessarily marketed things correctly, or taken all the opportunities that have presented themselves to kind of increase attendance and increase interest in Columbus, and maybe they haven't done everything that they should have done. I think Phil DeFray is a good example of that. I mean, we have this grassroots organization that's generating all kinds of buzz, Save the Crew, Phil DeFray, and the front office is not allowed to work with those groups to actually, you know, combine their forces a little bit and try to you know, make the best out of this situation. You know, I know if I worked for, you know, let's use Toys R Us as an example, right? Toys R Us is going out of business. If there was a substantial... you know, group trying to save Toys R Us, and I worked for Toys R Us, you know, I'd be reaching out to them being like, hey guys, we're Toys R Us, we want to keep our jobs too, let's see what we can do together, let's try to make something happen here. They're not allowed to do that. So you know, we're in this weird kind of situation where the fans are having to not only be fans but also kind of be sports business people and do these jobs in our spare time that people used to do in their work time. And and so if attendance suffers a little bit for that, then I think that's also understandable. But again, these are situations that are going to fix themselves with new ownership. And Phil DeFray, I think, will be much more successful in the summer months when people are just going to come out more. We're a few thousand below where we should be. But I don't even think that's necessarily something to, you know, be concerned about. If we're going to have a couple sellouts in the midst of all this stuff happening in the summer, I think people are going to be incredibly impressed, and they're not going to remember, you know, oh, they had 9,000 in March. Nobody's going to care. So I think all this is kind of, you have to take a longer term view of things. And you also have to keep in mind that this Austin stuff, nothing is going to happen until June at the earliest. They're going to get a report back in June, and they're going to talk about a stadium there. And we're not even sure if that's going to happen. There have been some, you know, rumblings that some of the city council members are not super thrilled with the answers they're getting from the city and not really trusting the information they're getting from the city. And they're bringing in a third party in, you know, economist to examine these things, and they're going to bring in some people to try to look at the traffic patterns and all this crap. So this might not even happen then, and it might get dragged on. I mean, I remember when people thought that FC Cincinnati was going to be a done deal in December, and we're here in April now. And is it going to be another month? Is it going to be 3 months? Is it going to be 6 months? Nobody knows, because these things take a long time. And, you know, we've been waiting for David Beckham's Miami team that he was promised 4 years ago. We still don't have a stadium site for him. And he's got way more money than Anthony Precourt has. So all of this stuff, you have to take a longer term view of and a longer kind of lens and look beyond last month, even look beyond next month. You know, don't even worry about April and May. You know, this is going to be a longer term deal. We're going to be okay, I think. But the attendance is not going to make or break us, and Phil DeFray can only help.
For what it's worth, FC Cincy would have a stadium settled if it weren't for Don Garber and MLS saying that Oakley isn't, you know, acceptable enough. But I will hand it off to Ralph, though, for last word on Save the Crew.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing I want to say, too, is, you know, all the folks out there that are making this possible, you look at Nate Beckman, John Zidar, Morgan being kind of the face of the whole situation. But one of the big things, too, I think that strikes the biggest impression to me, at least, you know, in my role of being kind of a photographer, pseudo sideline journalist at some point during the year, is seeing those bumblebee kits out on the, you know, out in the crowd. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I went through, you know, developing my photos from this week and seeing at least, you know, 10, 20 Bumblebee kits in the background of it. And just to see that uniformity and that unity between everybody to get together behind a common cause, you know, that jersey acts as an advertisement for the cause. And that's a great kind of icebreaker to anybody that you guys talk to. So, I mean, kudos to everybody out there at STC doing what they can. And, you know, like you guys all said too, these are all amateur people that are trying to major in sports marketing and sports business and management, and they're doing a hell of a great job. I just want to say from my perspective, congrats on all the success that they've had so far, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do from here on out.
And I will just say, Krutang Killabees, we on the swarm. Moving on, looking at one of the developments for the team back in the some news this week, Mike Grella, Gaston Sorrow, both of them with those very scary, you know, looking like career-threatening injuries last year. But Pat Murphy, I believe we've got an update on their status and may have an idea when they could be making their debuts for the season. Oh, sorry, I think we had one more comment that I might have cut off.
Nah, just go.
Nah.
Okay. Yeah, it was exciting today. We walked into training. It was just the guys who didn't play on Saturday or didn't start on Saturday that were training. But first thing, both Andrew Erickson and I noticed was Mike Grella and Gaston Sorrow are out there with the team. You know, playing in a drill that involved the ball and tackling and things like that. And that's more than we've seen from either of them. Since at least the season started. I think the first day of preseason, we saw Gaston do a little bit of stuff with the rest of the team. But yeah, so that's good news. We talked to both of them after training, and both seem very happy to be back in training, obviously, but also very optimistic. You know, for Gaston, it's been since 2016, I believe, that he's been on the field in a competitive game. Talking to Mike, he, you know, it was last year when he got hurt, but he was dealing with some knee issues all the way back to the playoffs the season before that. So both these guys have gone through some, you know, hellacious last year plus, you know, and I can, you know, only imagine as a guy who's gone through knee issues as a non-professional player, you know, just wanting to get back and be able to do things and whatnot. But for guys that's your career, you know, you're out there every day going through, you know, PT and stuff and watching the rest of your team play. You know, it's been a long journey, and, you know, we all know Gaston, but Mike was, you know, almost emotionally thankful to this team for giving him a chance. And you know, that was kind of cool to see. So, some very positive news. I think both of these guys, if they can, you know, remain healthy, if everything goes through, over these next couple weeks, I think they could both make an impact. It sounds like from talking to both of them and from talking to Greg that they're going to need, you know, some time to be back in training and get used to the speed of things and everything again. And, you know, Greg said today the next step would be once they're ready to play in some kind of exhibition game and see how that goes. So, as Greg said all year, he's not going to rush anything. I don't think there's a need to, especially given that you have depth in both those positions on the wings and at center back. Yeah, I thought it was great to see them back. I think these are guys, you know, obviously we've seen a little bit of Gaston, but him and Mike, I think, are guys that fans are going to like once they get back on the field.
It'll certainly be a terrific addition with both those, especially Mike Grella, as you look at right now at the season. I mean, Goodell is the one that's getting the most. You're talking about a guy that you drafted in the fourth round, rookie, that's getting some of the most time as a sub from those outside wing positions. And I think he'd certainly be a welcome addition to the lineup.
Andrew,
the way he's been able to score in the past.
Yeah, Andrew Erickson told me today that, speaking of Argudo, that he is 5 appearances away for setting the crew record for a third-round pick, which I thought was interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. not many third round picks play a lot for the Crew, I guess.
Not too many. This, I think, might be a good point to transition into some of our questions from fans. We've got one that I want to get in off the bat, not because I don't think we're going to be able to answer it, but because I think we should probably make this a homework assignment for next week. And it comes from Tim Fetcher, and he asks, you can only pick one player from each season. What would be your top two teams? The player must have made at least one appearance, I assume, in the season from which you choose. So I want to just, you know, pin that for next week, because I think that's a pretty terrific question. And then get into some of the other questions. One of them that kind of, I think, ties into the conversation about Gaston Sarro, and that's from, this is from Dave S. 1997. Why is Alex Crenali being loaned out to Orange County after starting several games last season? And I think ostensibly that's because they think that Gaston Sarro will make an will, you know, be able to be a productive, albeit maybe a rotation player at center back this year. And when you look at, you know, how crowded that center back group would be with Jonathan Mensah in there, with Lalas Abubakar, who's taken a big step this season, and of course Josh Williams, that Greg probably assumes that, or I think frankly that Alex Crenali's loan stint at Orange City might end up being longer than I think we initially expected.
Well, I think he needs to play.
Right. Yeah. That's he
needs
thing.
Minutes. So, I mean, kids need minutes, and if he's not going to get those minutes in Columbus, then yeah, they should absolutely loan him out. And I think that the terms of the loan, and Murph can probably correct me if I'm wrong on this, they can call him back anytime. So, I mean, if there is an injury and he's, you know, going to get minutes in Columbus, they'll fly him back to Columbus. You know, he's got family here. It's not a problem. And, you know, he can come back for two or three games, play here, and then go back. But I think it's good that he's getting regular time. I think he's got a future in this league and with this team. But they need to develop him, and especially for a defender. You know, he's got to play. He needs to play. He needs to get into this Berhalter system. He needs to kind of, well, not Berhalter system, but he needs to be able to kind of learn the positioning so that he can play in that system. And you're only going to do that getting actual game minutes. You know, scrimmages are good, but it's not going to cut it. So I think it's good that they loaned him out. Honestly, I wish they would loan out more players if they're not going to play. You know, get these young kids, either get them in the game for 10, 20 minutes, you know, fairly frequently, or you know, loan them out, get them off to some sort of USL team where they're going to start. So he's done really well since he moved there. He scored a goal in his opening game, stoppage time winner, I think it was, or 89th minute winner, whatever it was. And so he's been developing well, and hopefully that'll continue, because, you know, Mensah's not, you know, the youngest guy in the world. Josh Williams is not the youngest guy in the world. Gaston Sarro is not the youngest guy in the world. So we're gonna need a young center back at some point, and hopefully he can be the one.
We've got some questions as well on Facebook. This is from Jesse asking about another player, another young promising player. This one, though, who's apparently had some injury issues in Sosa, Eduardo Sosa, a.k.a. Guji. And Jesse's asking, how's that ankle? Any update on that from our intrepid reporters?
Not much. Greg said last week, it happened, just for people that missed it, it happened in the scrimmage against FC Cincinnati, which was a week ago from Sunday, and ankle injury, you know, Greg said it was a bad sprain and said he'd probably be out about 2 weeks or so, 2 or 3 weeks. So, yeah, I imagine, you know, they'll take the time with that. I don't think that you necessarily need him right now, and I do think you want to get him some minutes before you get to a point when you might need him to rest Federico Higuain, but you know, you also don't want to try and bring him back too quickly and have this become a longer term thing than it needs to be. He has looked good in practice. I will from the what we saw, and you know, in some of these scrimmage games, I do like what I've seen from him. I do think that he's still getting used to the physicality of MLS, you know, level and you know, how these guys play. But, you know, you can see, and, you know, for people that watch some of the preseason games, you can see that the vision and stuff is there, which is promising.
This is another one from Facebook from Justin. He's asking, what options do we have, we being the crew, to bring in a different look if plan A doesn't look effective? You know, specifically, kind of to the point we were making earlier when Adam John was brought on for those last 7 to 10 minutes. It hasn't looked like, this crew team doesn't look like a team that can necessarily react and change if it's not working. And that's been one of the criticisms for Greg Berhalter throughout his tenure as crew coach. Now, you can argue, you know, dictating and sticking to his system and his personnel has worked out more times than not. But does this team really have a plan B if plan A isn't working, especially given some of the depth issues in attacking skill positions? I think that silence speaks more than anything that anyone could have said.
Well, it's, you know, it's interesting because we talk about this every year, and I think that the idea is always the same with this team. You know, they want to possess the ball, they want to attack, you know, they want to build with their fullbacks, they want to get cross in. I mean, that's not going to change. I think that they do, you know, add some different things we've seen over the years to keep, you know, teams from knowing exactly what they're doing. But I think when we've seen this team play the way that it can, you know, you get results. Sometimes you give up goals, and so, you know, that is going to happen. But I think we've seen that improve over the last year or so. But, you know, Greg mentioned after, you know, specifically referring to this game, Greg mentioned afterwards that the fullbacks weren't getting high enough. The wingers were tucking too far in. So there just was no presence aside from Giassi and Federico Higuain up the field in that second half. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a plan B issue, though we have seen that in the past. I think that's more of just a weird mentality that they just didn't have in the second half. You know, I do think that you saw a bit of a plan B in a sense last year with the three or five in the back, but, you know, that was more of to improve the defense than it was to get to generate more offense. So, you know, I think offensively, when this team does what it's supposed to do, it's probably one of the best in the league, if not the best, at creating chances and scoring goals.
Got another question from Twitter. This from Drubal Drew. Asking if there are any updates on an international friendly this season.
I know Manchester United is playing San Jose Earthquake, so there's an international friendly for you.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. Given the current state of things, it wouldn't entirely surprise me if they just didn't have one. But I don't. That's just speculation on my part. That's not anything I've heard at all.
Yeah, I know last year they were talking with a number of teams for friendlies last year, and then they kind of audibled and tried to make it be this year. I heard whispers that Boca Juniors was being considered last season. I don't know if that's still a thing. I personally would be kind of surprised if we actually have a friendly this year, because I don't think they've spent any money doing anything extra for the fans. Mm-hmm. And so my kind of gut feel is they're going to continue to not do anything extra for the fans. But, you know, maybe they'll shock us and do a friendly. But yeah, I haven't heard a single peep about it so far.
Drew, don't hold your breath. But, you know, speaking of Boca Juniors, Alex, that brings us to a question actually from, as we alluded to him earlier, Nate Beckman. And he's asking, what would be a more memorable moment, seeing Guillermo Barrichello at the 10-year 2008 ceremony or in September, or seeing Crew Cat back from the grave?
I mean, we've seen Crew Cat from time to time, so I'm going to say Guillermo. But that's also a much bigger ask, and I would be very surprised if they got him out for this thing.
Yeah. I don't think it's a question, though. Guillermo would be.
Yeah, it's not even close, to be honest.
I don't even care about Kukat.
I care a lot about Kukat, but seeing Guillermo back would be very cool.
Oh, you guys mean SC that's dressed as Kukat? Or I don't...
Even better. So, the ceremony begins. No Guillermo. Suddenly, raising out of the, you know, out of the grave is Kukat. And then Kukat takes off his head, and it's Guillermo.
I like it.
All of it. Just all of it together. And then, one last question, a lighthearted one. This is from a new user, it appears, by the name of Zoltan Zebrahimovic. And he asks, in very much crew voice, how can crew business metrics without Zlatan? If no, does Zlatan have brother?
He does have siblings.
I love how serious Alex is answering this question.
Well,
use business
the reason...
metric as a verb. I love
business metric.
Yeah, I think his brother either had some sort of medical issue or may have even passed away.
Well, this got dark.
Yeah, but so he had a brother, I think. But I think. Yeah, can we talk about Ibrahimovic a little bit? Can we?
They want Zlatan.
I don't have time to talk about all of the things that I want to say about Zlatan.
The mystique of Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
I cheered in the press box when he scored that goal for LA, and I didn't even see it until after the game. But yes, Alex, go ahead. Talk about Zlatan. Oh,
let's do it. Yes. So
I don't remember if we talked about this when he signed or not. But for my money, he might be the perfect player for Major League Soccer.
I think we were off that week too, for the record.
Okay. So the things that I have always said, and this goes way back to the Falcao crap. but the reason that I really thought Falcao would be successful in Major League Soccer was because he was a fairly strong physical presence with really, really good technical ability. I think for a Major League Soccer striker, that's literally all you need. You need athleticism or strength plus technical ability. That's it. Your speed doesn't matter. Your personality doesn't matter. Your work rate doesn't matter. You need athleticism and technical ability. I think that Zlatan is maybe in the top two or three most athletic players in the world in terms of just like his ability to hold out other players. And he is probably the most technically gifted player in the world. Mm-hmm. So he's potentially a better fit for Major League Soccer right now than Lionel Messi. I'm just going to say it. I honestly, if I owned a Major League Soccer team and I had a choice between Messi and Ibrahimovic with perfect knees, I'm taking Ibrahimovic with perfect knees. The only question mark in this whole thing for me is what condition are his knees in? Can he play on turf? If he does not get injured, he is going to potentially break records in this league in terms of goal scoring.
Oh, he's going to smash him.
Yeah, he is that good in terms of his ability. Now, one other thing I want to say. So his goal was very good. I saw people on Twitter saying it was the best goal ever scored in Major League Soccer. It is not even the best goal ever scored by a Los Angeles Galaxy player in Major League Soccer. David Beckham's goal, 2012, Portland Timbers, way better. He kind of curls it around the keeper who was on his line. Yeah. Ibrahimovic keeper, not on his line. All he did was...
hit the net square in the middle. Though.
All it was a high-speed chip. That's all it was.
David Villa did a better version of the chip. It was because of the moment.
Yes.
Just coming off the bench, the fact that they were down.
And he scored two, yeah.
Right. And I think David Villa's goal was a more difficult... I mean, Zlatan's was on the volley, but...
Oh, the chip on Blake last season?
Yeah. But... This is nothing for Zlatan. He is going to score way nicer goals than this, and it's going to be really fun to watch him play. And I hope he gets food poisoning or something and can't play against the crew. But he is going to humiliate a lot of goalkeepers. I mean, you remember when Thierry Henry did the Olympico on Matt Lampson?
Matt, yep.
There's going to be stuff.
So
like
does
that.
Matt Lampson.
There's going to be stuff like that on pretty much a weekly basis from Ibrahimovic, assuming his knee is okay. He could blow out his knee 2 weeks from now, and then that's it. I think that's why they paid him $3 million. I'm not sure how what kind of condition he's in. It might be not so good if they're only paying him $3 million. But it could also be that he's being paid $3 million and then he's being paid, you know, $50 million in Bitcoin through some, you know, Don Garber slush fund that you know, they have in the Cayman Islands or something. But he's going to be really good. And yeah, for my money, you offer me Cristiano Ronaldo or Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Whoa, you changed it from Ronaldo to...
You offer me Messi, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, I'm taking Ibrahimovic.
What age is Lionel Messi?
He's, what, 29, 30 now?
Are we going with present-day Lionel Messi or are we going with maybe...
I don't care. I don't either. Either one.
I would take Ronaldo because I think Ronaldo follows your criteria of like physical and gifted and all that.
Ooh,
like,
he does, guys.
But I also think he's going to call Paris Hilton again and he's going to start living up the nightlife a little bit more than Ibrahimovic will. Ibrahimovic will do it. You know, he'll do the nightlife thing, but he's also going to just kind of buckle down and care about the games. I think Ronaldo, he's going to come to Major League Soccer. I think when he does, it's going to be a Pirlo type thing where he's, you know, he's going to check out and assume his career is basically over. He's here for a paycheck kind of thing. But hope I'm wrong.
Okay, so Lionel Messi over Zlatan. I mean, it's comparing apples to oranges. I mean, Zlatan is Zlatan. Lionel Messi is the greatest of all time. And you all can at me on Twitter on that one because he's so technically proficient. He has such a great grasp of the game. But let's talk about Zlatan. You guys are right. He's going to slash every record. He's going to – I'm going out on a limb. The season's what, 5 weeks old? Zlatan's winning the Golden Boot this year. And it's not even going to be close. It's going to be him and Joseph Martinez in a 1-2 punch, and Zlatan's going to beat him by like six goals.
I agree with that. Except for Jossie Zardes. That's what you need to forget. Jossie's going to score 30 this year.
Zlatan doesn't get – he's a lion. Well, he doesn't Zlatan think about people. 50. Zlatan doesn't think about the humans. He thinks about he's a lion, but he's gonna
a lion with a bad knee though. That's the big question mark for everybody. Is will Zlatan's knee blow up on some garbage pitch somewhere in the United States? Because there are a lot of really crappy surfaces.
He plays in Chicago in 2 weeks.
It could be bad.
But anyway, yeah, Messi over Ronaldo, but I'll still have both of them on my team.
Speaking of playing in Bridgeview, the Columbus Crew do that this weekend. First time all season that the Crew take on the hated Fire. The Fire so far this season dead last in the Eastern Conference. I believe all of them. No, Seattle's still yet to capture a point. But the Fire 0-2-1. Through three games played. So what are we thinking we're going to see this weekend in Bridgeview?
You know, I started kind of game planning already for this game because I wanted to get a beat on him because I used to be, fun fact, I used to be with the SB Nation website, Hot Time in Old Town, and they would talk about Fire things and say the world is falling apart there. And you know, it seems like Veljko Panovic, the head coach of the Fire, does not know what direction he wants to take this team. It seems the loss of David Akam has kind of factored very heavily for them. They don't really have much of an offense with the exception of Nikolic. It appears that Alexander Katai, one of their new signings, has got the potential to be very good. But their defense is in shambles. Kapelhoff got turned around inside out a couple times against Sporting Kansas City. Matt Polster, I believe, is on the injured list for a couple of weeks. He's out with, I think, another knee injury, if I'm not mistaken. And their goalie is very young, very green, and doesn't seem to have a good command of the back line necessarily. So, you know, I think if Christian Martinez and Pedro could have a decent game and get some good service in there, to beat this Fire team, they're going to probably have to take some dribbles into the box and wait till the last possible moment to get a decent cross going. But yeah, a lot of the defenders constantly ball watching. But I mean, really, it's going to be trying to break through Dax McCarty and Tony Chani in the center of the park. Basti looks like the luster has worn off of him. He looks a little bit slower than he did last season. But, yeah, I mean, as long as the Crew can kind of get past the center of the park and keep Nikolic off the scoreboard, I think they're going to have a decent run of things in Bridgeview.
Yeah, I think you touched on a lot of the Chicago's or the Fire's problems there. I talked about how I thought Schweinsteiger would not age well in MLS as he did not over in Europe, and it's appeared to be the case. And remember, this was a team that, you know, despite making the playoffs last year, really struggled in their knockout round game at home against the Red Bulls, I believe it was. And you know, I think there were signs at the end of last season that things weren't going well, and now they now that's showing to be the case here early in the season.
Chicago Fire suck. They're really bad this year.
Bridgeview.
Yeah, whatever you want to call them, they're really bad.
That was concise.
And they should feel bad.
Wow.
I like it. I think that's a pretty good lead into our picks. But as I'm letting you guys think about what you believe the result will be, I want to remind all of our wonderful listeners that they can take in the game this weekend at the Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street. Go online to oldnortharcade.com for more information as well. And now, Patrick Murphy, your predictions for Saturday's game versus the Fire.
Despite everything we just said, I am going to go 2-1 Chicago. I think. I think.
U-turn.
It seems no matter what happens when Columbus goes there, it doesn't go well. I don't know why this team can't figure out how to play at Toyota Park, right? Toyota Park.
Yep. 10-4. Brought to you by Valspar. Yeah.
Also, our Patrick Goldan will be there, and you know he brings bad luck to pretty much any place he goes. So.
Wow.
Ooh. Wow. Okay, so Smurf picking the Fire. Ralph, where you got?
I'm feeling a classy 3-1 victory. I think, you know, like I said, Nikolic is very good, so you're going to try really hard to keep him off the scoreboard. But, let's back it down 2-1. I'm going to call him mid-audible on the projection there. I'm thinking 2-1.
All right. 2-1 from Ralph Strudel. Alex, your thoughts?
Chicago Fire suck. They're bad. They should feel bad. 3-0 crew.
I like it. 3-0. And for what it's worth, I'm going to go with 3-1 crew. I still think 3-1 crew. Hey, shout out to the local Chicago supporter group.
Hey, I see what you did there.
I think still some time for Zach Steffen. I think with that, you know, offense of the weapons they do have in Chicago, someone finds the back of the net. But I think Jossy Zardes gets his first goal against a non-Canadian team and to help lead Columbus back into the win column and hopefully overtake NYC in the standings. Any other parting thoughts, friends, before we wrap this bad boy up?
Make sure you get involved with Phil DeFray. That's my first one. Talk to Nate. That's a great point you guys made earlier in the show. I think, you know, a couple weeks away from home can definitely help boost these crowds up, especially with the weather getting nicer. And then Columbus Eagles start up on Saturday night at Ohio Wesleyan, but it's kind of at the same time of the crew game. So, hey, it's up to you.
Another reason the crew will probably lose is I will not even be watching the game. I will be in Las Vegas, and that did not go well last year when I was in Las Vegas for the crew.
You guys lost Bart last year, if I remember correctly.
Oh. No, Bart's still here.
Smurf, yeah, I think Smurf stayed there a bit later.
That did happen. Actually, to be fair, I think the first game was a lot, like, I got in on a Wednesday, and they lost that game, and then this weekend game was the Montreal game, I want to say, when Justin scored the... So, actually, they did 50-50 while I was there. But...
Put it on black. Put it on black. All on black right when you get there.
I'm just going to put everything I own on black and hope it works out in my favor. There,
hey, you got that luck. You're Irish.
So, if I'm not here next week, you all know why.
He owes money to some very bad people.
Yep. Well, unfortunately, I don't think all that wonderful money we get to be front office shills is going to be able to pay, pay that debt. But that should be do it. Unless Alex, his last thought, I will succinctly put Alex's words in his mouth. Just the Fire suck. They should feel bad. They're all terrible people. Something to that effect.
Something about Falcao.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I was going to make a Falcao joke, but since Ralph ruined it, ruined the surprise. I have no final comments. Goodbye.
Talk about Zlatan.
That's it. Bye, buddies. Hey, buddies. It's the Massive Report podcast brought to you. Oh, just, well, it's live, but now you're counting down. What are we doing?
This okay, is gonna be hold a on. Really stop. Good, stop.
This
stop.
Is going to be a really good cold open.
Stop. We will probably put this in at the end. 3, 2, 1.